This interview is part of our Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation Career Path Series. We'll be speaking to different physical medicine and rehabilitation practitioners, also called physiatrists, about their career experiences. The American Academy of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation is presenting this series to provide insight into the variety of practice types available in this field. Dr. Venu Akathoda is Associate Professor and Pain Fellowship Director at the University of Colorado School of Medicine. He is triple board certified in physical medicine and rehabilitation, in pain medicine and electrodiagnostic medicine. He is a member of the team physician group for the University of Colorado Buffaloes and the University of Denver Pioneers. His practice focuses on aggressive non-surgical management of spinal injuries, sports medicine, and injection techniques.
Tell me about how did you pick physical medicine rehabilitation?
Well, I've actually been exposed to physical medicine rehab all my life. My dad's a physiatrist, so I'm one of those few people that knew about physiatry when they were 3 years old. You know, I had a science fair project with the amputees in seventh grade, and you know, just kind of went from there. I really didn't want to do what my dad did, as most kids are like, but. You know, as I went through med school, what I really liked was musculoskeletal system, neurology systems, and then taking care of patients on a continuous basis, and that's what really drew me.
Describe your training.
Well, I trained at RIC, actually. Joel Press is one of my mentors. I did my internship there. I did the four-year program, so there's no transitional year. You did your first year at Northwestern, and then you actually did rehab rotations your first year, which is a little bit different than most folks, which wait till their second year and so forth. And then finished my training there, and then did fellowship at RIC doing spine and sports. At that point, there was no ACGME accredited fellowships, really, for PM&R. And then I stayed on as a faculty member at RIC for a few years afterwards. And then in 2002, we moved out to Colorado.
So what do you do right now in Colorado?
So in Colorado, so I kind of have multiple hats that I wear. The thing that takes most of my time is taking care of patients, and they're primarily spine patients. I do about 3 days a week of spine care, so which involves lots of clinic work, some injections, some EMGs, and then I do 1 day a week of sports care, and then 1 day a week of research or other things. So that's my primary duties, and then kind of my secondary duties are I was the program director for the residency, and now the program director for the pain fellowship, which is actually kind of more or less a sports and spine fellowship. And then do some other things on the extracurricular side.
So you do a lot of teaching then?
Right. So we have residents all the time. You know, there's no clinic that goes by without a resident or a fellow. So we usually, my partners and I, have about three trainees, if you will, around at all times.
What do you look for in an applicant into the residency program or in a fellowship? What to you makes a good physiatrist?
For me, you know, the things I look for is someone that has consistently done well. I almost consider it like a football coach, a college football coach that's trying to get a good team. My job is to do a good recruitment process and then figure out the people that are going to be good on your team. People that I've found to be good are people that they, on every single rotation, they do well. They have great interpersonal skills. They are able to think. They're curious about the subject in every single rotation. They're not sailing through on a few rotations and really excelling in other rotations. You know, that's my perspective as a program director. When you do a rehab residency, you're going to go through lots of different rotations, and they're going to be very different. And you need to do well in each of those rotations. So that's what I really look for, is someone that has consistent effort all the time, that's intellectually curious.
And how important is the interview during that process?
The interview is important. To tell you the truth, what I look for in the interview is if you're normal or not. If I can spend time with them, you know, if it's going to be 3 or 4 years, and if it's someone you want to have a conversation at the kitchen sink with, That's what I'm looking for in an interview. My job as a physiatrist, I think, is making a judgment on people fairly quickly, and that helps actually with the interview, as you really read people's personalities very quickly, because as treating pain patients, you have to read their personality very quickly to know how to appropriately treat them. And it's kind of the same thing with medical student interviews.
Academic medicine, why does that appeal to you?
One of the main reasons is influencing people to really go out there and do things the right way. You know, what makes me feel good is, you know, we've trained a lot of people that I would absolutely send my family members to, and they're across the country, and that's what really makes me feel good about academics, is having all those folks that are out there kind of branching from the tree.
When you were in Chicago, were you in academics there too?
Right. So that was at the Rehab Institute of Chicago, which owns their doctors, but it's affiliated with Northwestern, so all the doctors are part of the Department of PM&R at Northwestern. So in Colorado, it's a little bit different of an academic setting because the hospital doesn't own the physicians or employ the physicians. There's a separate entity, School of Medicine entity, that employs the physician, contracts the physicians, and then we practice at the hospital, which it can be a little bit confusing because there's the patient actually gets two bills. They get a bill from the professional, the physician, and then they get a bill from the hospital. And so it can be really confusing, whereas at RAC, also an academic setting, you just got one bill. That influences how things are managed and practiced, actually.
What do you enjoy most about your practice, the way it's set up right now?
You know, the thing I really like is the variety of the practice. I do different things almost every day. So I rarely in clinic from 8 to 5 seeing patients every 15, 30 minutes. It's broken up. So sometimes some half days I'm doing procedures, some half days I'm doing EMGs, some half days I'm seeing patients, some half days I'm doing sports, some half days there's research meetings. So there's always something different going on, and that's really stimulating to me.
And how are your patients referred to you?
Well, you know, I'm in a very large integrated system, kind of like you are. So the integrated system is the basis for probably, you know, 60% of our referrals. So there's a large primary care network that feeds into the University of Colorado. And you know, if they have spine pain, consult Spine Center and you see one of us. So that's the main way we get patients.
Do you do any inpatient work right now, or is it all outpatient?
Yeah, I take call, and I take call about 5 to 8 times a year. So that means, you know, up to eight weekends of rounding at a couple different hospitals. You know, every place seems to have different ways of taking call and how things work. But we're a relatively small group, so it helps that everyone takes call because it really divides up the workload.
What types of procedures do you do?
I do lots of spinal procedures, from lumbar procedures to cervical procedures, to some discography. We work with surgeons, so I actually get a good number of discography procedures, epidurals to joint injections to whatever else. The only things I don't like doing are very high-level cervicals, so I don't do C01 injections. I do C12 injections, and I don't do sympathetic blocks. When we have a separate pain center that the anesthesiologists do that.
Is the pain center part of the university setting?
Right. So what we've really tried to do is have our spine and sports practice more acute and subacute pain, and have the pain center be more the chronic pain.
Now, you said that you were part of a pain fellowship,
mm-hmm.
but you called it more sports spine. Can you elaborate?
Yeah, so, you know, our fellowship has evolved. So We initially had when I started in Colorado, we had a sports and spine fellowship, and they basically just followed us around and basically emulated our practice, which was about 60% spine and 40% sports, and covered a lot of procedures, lots of events and so forth. We had the opportunity to apply for ACGME pain accreditation. And I thought that was important because there was not many physiatry programs that were the primary administrator of the pain fellowships. So we did that, and it's helped. It's actually helped some of our fellows get privileges at certain hospitals. You know, they say they're from and you're automatically accredited to do X amount of procedures.
Do you think that that's required now? To be ACGME accredited to do certain types of procedures?
I don't think it's required in most places. I think it's helpful, but it's not necessarily a requisite. But, you know, the University of Michigan hospital system, for example, if you want to do procedures there, you have to be ACGME accredited. There are exceptions rather than the rule, but it does help.
It seems like that's more for larger academic practices. Do they require things like accreditation?
Yeah, or even sometimes private hospitals. Speaking of this, it's almost reminiscent of the whole EMG experience. And so people used to get blocked from doing EMGs at hospitals if they weren't board certified by AANEM. And that's why people took that test. That's why people tried to get fellowships that were accredited in that manner. But there's been ways that have circumvented that, and I think the same thing is with pain fellowships. There's lots of different ways to circumvent that need to do procedures in a hospital. You can do procedures in a same-day surgery center, and you can do it in your office. So there's lots of different ways to get around that. So,
what do you think about the future in that regard?
The biggest change that I see in the future of interventional procedures in general is that there's going to be more of a policing of the amount of procedures that are being done and for whatever diagnosis. So, you know, Medicare is only going to be able to spend X amount of money, and for them to be able to do that, they're going to have to police even further than before.
So almost if there's going to be less of the procedures, not necessarily less people who are qualified to do them.
Correct.
Interesting. I know you're involved in a lot of committees with research and publications. Why is this important for our field?
Well, you know, I'll speak at it from the perspective of the PM&R Journal. So I'm one of the senior editors on the PM&R Journal, and seeing it from that end, it's really important that we give evidence to what we do. I'd say that 80% of what we do in physiatry is not necessarily because of high-level evidence. I think it's similar to other specialties in that we don't have evidence in a lot of different things. But as healthcare changes and as we get policed more and as there's rationing, then we're going to need more evidence to fight our battles.
How do you think the field's going to do in the future with regard to future changes?
You know, I think that our field will do well relative to other fields because the population is going to grow older, and physiatry is, you know, right up there for geriatric care. From a patient need perspective, I think there'll be quite a bit. There's, you know, always MSK injury. There's always neuro injuries. From a patient population perspective, I don't think that it'll be bad at all. In fact, I think we'll be busier. I think what's going to be hard to foresee is how things are going to be reimbursed and what the value for the type of care that we provide is going to be. So we really have to emphasize our value, and value might not be able to be studied very easily in rehab, and that's the kind of things that we really need to develop, because we're not talking necessarily about life and death issues. We're talking about morbidity in rehab.
Do you think that rehab is cost effective compared to other ways of treating patients?
I think that it's theoretically cost effective, but we just haven't proven the case. So again, that's why research is going to be so important in our field.
So tell me, was choosing the same field as your father ultimately a good choice?
Yes, yeah, I think so. You know, I didn't end up practicing with him, which is probably good for both of us. You know, not that I don't know anyone that I'd trust more, but it, you know, he has a totally different style of practice. His practice is a lot of EMGs, a lot of consults. He's a one-man show. He's self-employed.
Where is he at now?
He's in Dayton, Ohio.
Okay.
He works 7 days a week. You know, he's always available. He has a hard time taking vacation. There's a lot of things that I couldn't necessarily do.
And so you don't have a problem taking vacation then?
I have no problem taking vacation.
Would you do all over again? Would you do it the same way?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I feel real fortunate that I'm in this field, and I feel real lucky that I'm helping people. You know, somebody told me once, I really like seeing you guys because you're useful. You know, I think as a specialty, that's something that we can really emphasize is that we're useful. We're going to do things to try to help you get better. And it's not just diagnosis. It is partly that, but we're actually instituting a lot of treatments. It, you know, really makes you feel good when that person gets better.
Especially given your father's perspective, you've gone on to lead a more academic life. Why did you go into academic? What appeals to you in that arena?
You know, what appeals to me is that you can influence people, influence other practitioners, providers. You can do research. You can have a variety of a practice. You have some safety as well. You know, you have kind of a safety net in case you're not busy, in case you need time to develop things. You know, in private practice, you know, my wife is a physiatrist, and physiatry is kind of in our blood, and maybe our kids are going to be physiatrists too. But, you know, seeing her in private practice, she doesn't have a safety net. She takes a lot of risk, and every time she takes a day off, she feels the skin that's being taken out of the game.
So what are some things you enjoy outside of medicine?
I enjoy hanging out with my family. Being in Colorado, you kind of like to have, you really need to enjoy the outdoor lifestyle to really get everything out of it. So we do lots of outdoor things. We live at 8,000 feet on the top of a mountain. We have about 20 miles of trails. So we run, hike, mountain bike, road bike, ski, snowboard, the Colorado things.
Of course. Sounds like a good life then.
Yeah, cannot complain. Cannot complain at all.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell to maybe future medical students who are looking to get into this field?
You know, I think it's a field that's really blossomed. Seeing it across many generations, I think in the past there's people that didn't know what the field really entailed, and now I think that perception over the years has really changed. You know, people seek out physiatrists. It's not somewhere you end up. It's really a nice feeling to know that we're on the front end of things, not on the back end of things. And you know, it's a growth field. It's not a field that's gone and passed.
Thank you for listening to this podcast presented by the American Academy of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation. For more information, visit our website at www.aapmr.org.